Please, Kay. So first, I'd like to start by thanking the organizers, especially for bearing with me and being so willing to accommodate my talk. Yes, I am here despite United's best efforts to stop me getting here. And so I wanted to talk today not about dark matter, but about the Higgs, which of course we've all been very interested in. And even though I'm generically going to be talking about looking for ways in which we can see new weakly interacting particles indirectly in Higgs physics, I just couldn't resist from my very dark matter-centric worldview to just start slightly philosophically with dark matter, because this, I think, is the primary evidence that we have for physics beyond the standard model, is the fact that there's this massive amount of dark matter that clearly is not from the standard model. And our favorite theory, of course, is the WIMP. And despite this massive manhunt, we haven't found it yet, either underground. So in some sense, the scattering, the name WIMP is a little bit of a misnomer, because if the dark matter actually interacted through weak forces, we would have already found it. The scattering cross-section for that is about 10 to the minus 39 centimeters squared. And in direct detection experiments, we're all the way down at 10 to the minus 45. But we're going to be probing a very important benchmark, 10 to the minus 45 to 10 to the minus 46 centimeters squared, which is where you would expect to find a Higgs interacting particle. And the timescale experiments over the next 5 to 10 years are going to cover that. At the same time, indirect detection experiments are also covering this WIMP parameter space. So the annihilation cross-section here, this is from the Fermi experiment. A thermal dark matter particle is at 3 times 10 to the minus 26 centimeter cubed per second. A WINO candidate, for example, sits up here between 10 to the minus 23 and 10 to the minus 24 centimeter cubed per second. And if it's annihilating, for example, to WW, you can see that over much of this mass range, it's actually quite constrained already by the indirect detection experiments. If you go up here to even more massive particles, where Hess becomes important, the annihilation of a thermal WINO, which is between 2 and 3 TeV, is naturally somewhere in the 10 to the minus 27 centimeter cubed per second. And you can see that Hess is actually strongly constraining that. So we're really starting to push into, in indirect detection experiments, the WIMP parameter space. At the same time, in collider experiments, as we all know very well, we've got tons of searches. This plot is not even updated with the latest sets, but more and more parameter space is being covered. Of course, we're getting better and better at hiding particles as theorists by invoking R parity or other types of things. But I think the feeling in the community right now is, what's next? We have the Higgs, which is obviously a huge triumph for the field, but there's nothing else. And you might have a few initial reactions to this. You could panic. Which I maybe, you know, at least in the US, maybe has been a little bit of a response, maybe emotional response, that maybe particle physics is going to be all downhill from here, and we really need to worry about the future of our field. The next sort of response is just sort of, you know, you build bigger detectors, bigger direct detection experiments, you go to higher energies. In some sense, there's no replacement for that. But of course, this is going to be subject to ultimately how the technology develops, how much money is available in the field. On the other hand, there's a very important program of looking in new places and optimizing existing searches. Of course, we all know this intuitively. And I think one important aspect of this is to get over our naturalness addiction, that all of these theories really are becoming increasingly fine-tuned. And at the end of the day, nature just may be fine-tuned, or our understanding of what is natural may need to be changed. So if we're in this situation now, where going to bigger detectors and higher energies, in particular to higher energies, may be further off, we want to know, well, what is the best motivated way of looking for new physics that doesn't require just waiting another 20 years? And the things I'm going to talk about in this are focused on the Higgs, but I really want to use dark matter as the primary motivator for where I should look. Because we know that dark matter exists in the universe and that there are, in fact, good reasons for finding it that may not, in fact, be directly connected to this naturalness. So I'm going to go through two different examples, and both of them are well known, but I want to just talk about sort of one perspective on how this might be directly connected to dark matter. So it's well known that there is this connection between the Higgs mass and the scale at which new physics must enter in order to have a metastable electroweak vacuum. So just to remind you of how this works, so you have the Higgs potential, and of course you want it to be stable or at least metastable out to very large vacuum expectation values. But the point is that this quartic is fixed at the low scale by the Higgs mass, and the other particles induce changes to that quartic as you go to higher scales. And so the point is that depending on what that IR value is, this quartic can in fact go negative at the high scale, and in fact what can happen then is that the electroweak vacuum can become unstable. So of course we don't require absolute stability. We only require stability on the timescales of the age of the universe, but ultimately what you need to do is a Coleman-DeLucia type calculation for being able to tunnel through this barrier, and you get some requirement, which is not that this quartic be greater than zero at large VEVs, but in fact that this rate that you get from doing the Coleman-DeLucia calculation just be slower than the age of the universe. So when you do that calculation, so here's one way you can rephrase it, is you have a plot, which is the Higgs mass versus the coupling, and the Higgs is, you know, up here around 125. And what that tells you is that that sits right in this region, which is between where the electroweak vacuum is exactly stable versus where it's only metastable. Of course, now by itself, that's not problematic. I mean, we still exist in a metastable vacuum in any case. But what that actually tells you is as soon as you add anything anywhere near the electroweak scale, you really have very dramatic possibilities to move yourself from this metastable state into, in fact, an unstable one. And I want to look at a specific case, which is just minimal dark matter. Okay, I know dark matter exists in the universe. It may be asymmetric dark matter. On the other hand, it may not be asymmetric dark matter. It could just be some minimal extension of the Standard Model with nothing else. And in fact, because it's only weakly interacting, the constraints on these particles are much less stringent than, of course, on the colored particles. So let's just take an example of how this works. Let's look at a singlet-doublet fermion, which would be motivated from Beano-Higgsino dark matter, and a triplet-doublet fermion. Look at Beano-Higgsino dark matter. And the point that I want to make here is that when you combine this information with cosmological information, namely the relic abundance, indirect detection, and direct detection, this actually has very important implications for the stability of the Higgs that can actually imply that new physics must enter at scales which are probable maybe not at LHC energies, but could be probable, say, through flavor. So here are two plots which summarize this. So in the left-hand plot is this singlet-doublet, so Beano-Higgsino. The right-hand plot is triplet-doublet. And these bands here are Higgs mass versus the cutoff, and they're metastability bands. So by that, I mean, to the left-hand side, it's stable. To the right-hand side, it's unstable. In between, this is a metastable vacuum. And these numbers correspond to this coupling here to the Higgs. So you can see that sort of for very modest choices of this coupling, if I say crank this up to 0.5 for this singlet doublet, you can see that for this range of the Higgs masses, new physics has to enter at a much lower scale than the Planck scale, say around 10 to the 7 GeV. It's even more dramatic effect, as you would expect for triplet doublet, again, for these sort of modest couplings. But what I'm actually more interested in is making the direct correlation between these, the stability, and what we could know about the couplings of the Higgs through its relic density and through direct detection. So I want to add in this additional information from direct detection and relic density. And in particular, the key point here is that the relic density actually places a floor on the size of the coupling to the Higgs. I have to deplete a thermal particle in the universe. And so when you do this, the results that you get out are actually pretty interesting. So look at a singlet-doublet case. So let me just walk you through what's on these plots. So down here are the couplings to the Higgs. These bands here correspond to the regions in phase space where you actually will obtain the correct relic density. So that's telling you that the Higgs coupling is important for setting the correct relic density. And then these bands correspond to the direct detection cross-section. So these pink areas here are already ruled out by the xenon data. And these other bands correspond to various direct detection cross-sections starting at 10 to the minus 43 and down to 10 to the minus 46 centimeters squared. One of the interesting things about this that was developed further in other literatures, you can see that there's this cancellation region where you would never actually see anything in a direct detection experiment. Nevertheless, what happens when you combine this information with the relic density and the direct detection, along with these bands correspond to the scale in GeV at which new physics must enter in order for the electroweak vacuum to be stable. So one is to so what we wanted to do was to put twice as much information on one plot. So what we have here is on this side it's stability and the other side it's metastability. So what you can see is actually over the entire parameter space for this particular choice of masses, which you could pick up in a direct detection experiment, that the scale at which new physics must enter in order to save the electroweak vacuum is something like 100 GeV. Now, you're not going to be able to get that at a collider, but you can actually, this is a scale that you would expect to be able to probe, for example, with flavor experiments. So combining this information from a direct detection experiment from the Higgs and from what we might know from relic density, you can actually glean some information about what scale new physics has to enter. Right, so this is, the S is the singlet, the D is the doublet, and H is the Higgs. Yeah, right. So you're mixing the singlet and the doublet together. It's like a beano-Higgsino dark matter. You can do a similar type of thing for the triplet case. You can see that if you take this scale, doublet-triplet case, so this is similar to Higgsino-Wino dark matter. If you take this heavy enough, in this case, it can survive completely by annihilating to W's. In that case, you don't glean information about the scale at which new physics must enter. And on the other hand, if for a slightly different set of couplings, you do get this information. So this is just for the case of fermion dark matter. Okay, that tends to destabilize the Higgs vacuum. If instead it was scalar dark matter, that would tend to stabilize the vacuum. I'm not going to go through that case. The interesting constraint in that case actually comes from perturbativity. So in that case, you actually get a constraint on the scale of new physics from requiring that those couplings remain perturbative throughout the theory. So we just talked about using the Higgs to gain Higgs cross-correlated with direct detection, and the relic density to gain information about the scale at which new physics must enter. I want to talk about a different way now that you could inspect the Higgs for new information, which, you know, there have been other talks about this, a lot of interest, is just through the branching fractions. So when there were these hints for enhanced Higgs to gamma-gamma, there was obviously a lot of activity. There was a lot of scanning. For someone who is not maybe directly involved in some of these models, it can sometimes be difficult to read off from these what exactly are the new physics that are entering, why they're entering, and how I pull these things apart. So I just wanted to ask a generic question. How do you think about separating which combinations of observables are relevant for which combinations of theoretical parameters? And this seems like a really basic question, but we found as we went through this that while for experts working on particular classes of models, say the NMSSM, it might be obvious what effects enter into these types of diagrams, it's not always obvious from the outside. And in particular, people were interested in connecting the Fermi line, so that was dark matter annihilation to gamma-gamma, which was boosted, to enhanced Higgs to gamma-gamma. And looking at regions of the NMSSM parameter space that could accommodate, and what I wanted to understand was how do you separate the loop level effects that might be entering here from the tree level effects? So the more general question here is how do you map Higgs physics to new physics from Higgs observations? So the basic observables that you have are the ratio of some rate to the standard model rate. I'm always going to be normalizing to the standard model rate. And I'm going to be writing these observables in terms of production of the Higgs. That's going to be the superscript on this. And then the branching fraction to some final state. And I just want to know the answer to the question, how is it that I separate from the observables the tree level effects from the loop effects? And I want to do a simple case study to see how this could work. Just look at the case of singlet plus two Higgs doublet plus any new electroweak states in the loop. And I'm going to suppose that the new color particles are going to show up elsewhere first, so I'm going to restrict myself to the case of weakly interacting particles. And then I'm going to ask the question of how do I separate out the effects that would come from tree level versus loop level, which is where dark matter might enter. So let me just tell you a story, okay, of how this might go. So in the case of an NMSM type theory, singlet plus two Higgs doublet plus some new electroweak states, you can write this down, this theory down in terms of the tree level, which is two mixing angles. So I can write the Higgs, the observed Higgs state, in terms of a linear combination of the up, down, and singlet type. And so I can parameterize that in terms of two angles, one of which controls the singlet component, and one which effectively controls the decoupling limit. And so I can redefine this now in terms of a decoupling angle, delta, which is defined in terms of alpha and then the usual tan beta that tells you how strongly the Higgs couples to a top or a bottom. Now, when I do this, I can just write down the tree level couplings of the Higgs. So this is effectively the coupling of the Higgs mass eigenstate to a top, a bottom, or vector bosons at tree level. And you can see this is simple linear combinations of these parameters, and I've just extracted them from low-energy Higgs theorems. And looking at these expressions, what becomes immediately obvious is that I have a very simple way of just walking through and extracting each of these parameters step by step. So for a tree-level dominated case, what I wanted to do is just look at ratios of these guys. So if I look at ratios of the primary observables, so let's take Bs to vector boson. So the production being the same, whether through gluon fusion or vector boson fusion. And then I'm going to decay to BB bar or a pair of vector bosons. And then the other observable that I'm going to look at is the production through the rate for gluon fusion versus through vector boson fusion. Now, what this tells you is that once I look at these ratios, I can immediately just read off my two tree level parameters. I can just read off tan beta and tan delta by just looking at the ratio of these two. Of course, the singlet mixing immediately just drops out. And so it allows me to nail down very well the extent to which I might be in the decoupling limit, which is here. If I'm actually in the decoupling limit, then my sensitivity to tan beta, of course, decouples. On the other hand, if I'm not in the decoupling limit, reading off the combination of these two parameters will allow me to uniquely read off beta and delta. And in fact, it makes obvious that there are simple correlations, and in fact, there are unphysical regions. So now on these, I've just changed this. I've made contours of tan beta and tan delta and just put the observables on the two axes. And in fact, this theory then forces you into particular regions. Once you have those two parameters, then you can extract the singlet mixing by looking at the absolute ratio of the size of, say, production to gluon fusion or through vector boson fusion. So now you have all of the tree level parameters. And with the tree level parameters, then it makes it easy to read off what the loop level parameters are. So once again, looking at ratios to gamma gamma and vector boson fusion, this ratio is not very sensitive to tree level parameters. And the reason, of course, is because Higgs decay to gamma gamma in the standard model is dominated by a loop of gauge bosons. So if I look at this ratio and compare it to the earlier ratios, it's actually much, much less sensitive to delta and beta. And so what that tells you is that if I look at this ratio, it allows me to extract very well the contribution from the virtual electroweak states. And so now what you're able to do is to make a plot, which is gamma gamma over vector boson fusion, which depends on the tree level parameters, which you've already read off from other observables, and then a contribution which comes from gamma gamma. And this is all the new physics, which is not tree level physics, is sitting in this little black box here. And for any given theory that I have, I can just calculate it using low energy Higgs theorems. So if I now make contours of this, this ratio, which is some parameters that depend on the new particles, new electroweak particles in the loop, and their ratio to the W's, okay, as you would expect. Now here I have this observable, the ratio of gamma gamma versus vector bosons. And if I want to double check and make sure my theory makes sense, I can actually compare it against another tree level case, in this case, gluons to vector boson fusion. And then this region here would be, for example, if both were consistent with the standard model, I could actually put very strong constraints on this quantity here. And so as a result, I'm able to now just directly read off and actually calculate the effect of whatever theory that I want from that little module. And for example, I can do this for the NMSSM. So I take some parameters that I've measured through the orthogonal measurements, okay? And now I can just write out the enhancement that you could get for gamma-gamma to vector bosons, okay? And so, again, I think perhaps for many people working on this, this is maybe sort of intuitive, but this just provides a sort of very clear roadmap about how one should separate the tree-level physics from loop physics by looking at these combinations of ratios of variables. So let me just summarize. Traditional probes are closing an increasing fraction of the window for new electroweak states. I think it's true in general that to close or observe the remaining part of the window, we're going to need to use complementary probes. The Higgs, in many ways, provides an opportunity to do that through indirect probes. And the specific case that I talked about here was two case studies of stability with dark matter, and then production and decay, how to separate out the effects of the loop parameters from the tree parameters. And I tried to argue that these can be more effectively utilized by looking at correlations between the observables. I haven't discussed this in a lot of detail, but especially in the last case, there are a lot of correlations with direct and indirect detection experiments, which is another talk. Flavor is important too, and really a multi-pronged approach is going to be necessary. Thanks.
Thank you for your talk. We have time for questions. Questions, please.
I just want to know how easy it's to get constraints from flavor, no? Because you will have to fix the Higgs potential. So there's no, I mean, it's...
It's going to be very UV dependent.
It's very UV dependent, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Higgs gamma gamma. From the gamma gamma line, but then so did you put that?
Right. So that was that was the point that I said. So we didn't actually do that to make the connection between this and the gamma gamma line. And the reason why we stopped there was I ceased to believe that the Fermi line was due to dark matter. And so actually, one could actually very straightforwardly take this formalism now and just directly connect it to the indirect detection in the gamma line. We didn't do that, but it would definitely be a very natural extension of this. Was that your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you mentioned it, but then you...
I mentioned it, and the reason was that is I got very motivated to look at this because I was thinking about that connection, and I was trying to understand if there was a simple analytic way of extracting what part of this was due to the tree physics and what part was due to the loop physics, and whether I could just write down a plot where I could just read it off. And I think all the tools are now there that you could do that and easily apply it to the case of indirect detection, in particular of lines. But the motivation on the dark matter side dropped below threshold.
More questions or comments? Well, I don't see any, so let's thank Catherine Zurek again.